in referring to head 41, page 500, asked, he inquired of the ministry some clarification to the situation at the Angers agro-processing facility and the cocoa micro-fomentary. I wish to respond, Mr. Speaker, by indicating to the member, to through you, Mr. Speaker, that the agro-processing plant, which is located at Angers, has been completed, but there are changes which have to be made to the design before the women cluster can occupy that facility. The recommendations were made before. Works were undertaken, but not to the specification required by the group. Therefore, the designs must be changed and work must be completed before operations can begin. He also inquired of the ministry in this very same, on this very same issue about equipment and so on for this processing plant. I wish to indicate through you, Mr. Speaker, that yes, a large number of pieces of equipment were purchased by ICA, the Inter-American Institute for Cooperation and Agriculture, through the SFA 2005, which is a special framework of assistance, UN Women, Canadian Fund for Local Initiatives, and the equipment is attached. The cocoa micro-fermentary, Mr. Speaker, has the equipment. The equipment needs to be installed. There are boxes and so on. And there are some issues with the building, which we must now go in to fix. The fermentary requires installation of water and electricity. There is also a framework, I think the member asked about the operation of the cocoa and the management of the fermentary. The St. Lucia Premium Cocoa Producers Group have been in discussions with the ministry, and they will be handling the management of that facility. Point two, through Mr. Speaker, the member inquired of the ministry about the Youth Agri-Entrepreneurship Project. I wish to indicate through Mr. Speaker that the project was launched in August 2011. However, since that time, there's been, between August 2011 and December 2011, not much happened. Since the assumption of duties at the ministry, Mr. Speaker, we have had a new coordinator and two new committees have been selected, the Technical Committee and the National Steering Committee. We are aware that 151 individuals were shortlisted, 129 individuals have been interviewed, and I can report, Mr. Speaker, that the young people are awaiting the implementation of this project, but the technical committee is only now reviewing all of the applications because a number of issues have to be resolved. We are also visiting sites, and we are only now completing the operation management plans. These were not done yet, Mr. Speaker. We are also looking at Roseau and Ballambush. We are nearing completion of plans to include those areas for the project in terms of leasing land to persons who will be participating. One major challenge, Mr. Speaker, I can inform the member that we need to review the budget outline to facilitate the activities which need to be undertaken. The third query, Mr. Speaker, through you by the member, it's on the National Meat Processing Facility. Most people refer to it as the Beauséjour Abattoir. And I wish to, through you, Mr. Speaker, to respond that the facility commenced in May of 2010. It was originally scheduled to open in April of 2011, but there were challenges with the design. There were many revised dates for the opening. The member asked about the opening of it. July 2011, October 2011, there was a revised date of February 2012, and I'm being informed that now it's expected to be completed by late May or early June 2012. The initial construction cost, Mr. Speaker, was 9.8 million and equipment 4.5 million, but the project now has a revised construction cost of $12.637 million, a variance of about $2 million. I also wish through you, Mr. Speaker, to respond that the variance is due mainly to an error in the foundation of the building, which was inconsistent with the design and implementation of the recommendations made by the FAO, and a consultant is now working on remedying that situation. There were no specific plans for the air conditioning of the slaughter area, Mr. Speaker, and that would pose difficulty with international food safety standards, and we are looking at that in conjunction with the FAO at this time. I also wish to, through you, Mr. Speaker, inform the member that two suppliers of equipment are now prepared to present quotations on equipment, and that is being done. The Brazilian government is prepared to facilitate that development. So we have had tremendous problems in getting this project finally off the ground, but we are working very hard to ensure that we fix all the difficulties and the problems. And the very last query through you, Mr. Speaker, the member queried a number of the items on the agency administration. The member for Miku South indicated that he wanted to find out why, for example, if I may use one or two examples, the rehabilitation of major drains on page 500-223, he indicated that it's a cost of 2.25 million and the estimates only cater for 750,000. And he gave several examples, for example, the livestock repositioning program on 221, he indicated that while we're saying it's 18 million, we're only allocating 1 million. In response, I wish to draw the member's attention, Mr. Speaker, to several other estimates presented when he was in government. And this is just normal, Mr. Speaker, that you indicate the total project cost, and then every year you allocate for various stages. And just to end, I just wish to use one example from the 2010-2011 budget to illustrate to the member that, for example, we can take the same head 41, Ministry of Agriculture and so on, and I can use an example. Let's just take any one of them. Banana Production Management Unit on the 12 Crop Development 226. In the 2010-2011 estimates, his government at the time estimated $25.7 million, $25.78 million, but during that year they only allocated $1.4 million. So that is just routine, and this is how the process unfolds. I wish to thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hope I was of some assistance to the member. Thank you very much.
Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, when we agreed to this new procedure under your guidance, and indeed with the advice that you extended to members, there were some among us who had doubts about the value of this new procedure. It is true, Mr. Speaker, that the leader of the opposition understood, because he was a former parliamentarian and had experience in the process that was adopted. But there were doubts, anxieties. But I think we have done exceedingly well under your guidance, Mr. Speaker. We all can only do better the next time round, all of us. And this debate has given us a unique opportunity to analyze the estimates of expenditure, to get a sense of the value of the programs, to assess the various programs, engage in a very clinical analysis of the estimates. I think that has been achieved, and I want to commend all members of the House. Mr. Speaker, for my part, I thank all members for their observations, and I thank the opposition as well for their criticisms, but also for the words of advice, and in some instances, obvious support for particular programs. Save with the possibility of one member of the opposition, all other members generally criticized, but at the same time, they identified programs that were helpful to the country and to their constituency. And I want to thank them and say that this process will be of no value if a Minister of Finance does not take on board the multiplicity of the comments and the diverse nature of the comments. Mr. Speaker, allow me a little leeway because of this procedural issue. There were some remarkable speeches, and for me, Mr. Speaker, the presentation of the member from Denry South was a particularly interesting presentation. I say this because he had the courage to talk about his soul and his spirit. Save, Mr. Speaker, when he entered the personal domain and he raised the issue of anger in Parliament among individuals. I would say to him that I have never ever been ashamed to say publicly that I have learnt a lot from my sojourn in opposition. And perhaps what he can do now that he is in the opposition is to reflect and ask himself what it is that the government he was once part of did to the opposition that created that anger and that disappointment. And perhaps, Mr. Speaker, one day we can have a personal conversation on this rather delicate matter. Because I think in both instances there is so much to learn from that experience. But it is the spirit of his presentation that was important. Mr. Speaker, in equal vein, I thank the Leader of the Opposition for his observations, though you will concede that I will have to flame in a few minutes on some matters. I particularly like the conclusion of his address, because in that conclusion he evinced a willingness to walk hand in hand with the government to resolve the problems of the country. What I think he needs to disown are his words of introduction at the commencement of his speech. You see, Mr. Speaker, his spirit and his soul spoke at the end, but at the commencement, it was a different language from a different source. But I prefer the conclusion rather than the commencement. Mr. Speaker, in some ways, the presentation from the opposition was at times contradictory. There are occasions when the government was flayed for the addition of some posts, increasing allegedly recurrent expenditure. Yet, on the other hand, I am being asked to create posts in other areas. Now, be consistent. What do you want? You can't be saying that somehow we are going overboard with the creation of posts, and then on the other hand, you are lamenting the fact that certain posts do exist in certain areas, or you are asking that the government create new posts to handle new situations and exigencies. We have to be consistent. To be frank, Mr. Speaker, I had never intended to speak about the office of the Leader of the Opposition. Never. Because I did not want to politicize this issue, and it goes back to that experience. But the leader of the opposition gave me no room on this matter, because it was one of the items that could have been included in my statement regarding the outlay for recurrent expenditure, but I refrained from mentioning it, again because I felt that this was one matter that ought not to enter into the public domain, although public expenditure was involved. But since the leader of the opposition asked and shared the fact that there was an exchange between himself and myself on this office, then I have no choice but to report that in this financial year, the office of the leader of the opposition would be strengthened and some $306,401 in addition will be spent in that office. The Minister of Finance has agreed to a strengthened office. A provision has been made for a research officer, an office administrator, a clerk typist, and a vehicle for the leader of the opposition. Now, I say this again, the stark contradiction. I am being flayed because a post of permanent secretary has been created in the office of the Prime Minister, and I shall come to that in a minute. Mr. Speaker, the thrust of the attack on the increase in the recurrent budget was an issue, as I indicated, of staff. I'm a little surprised that so much energy was spent on the creation of the post of permanent secretary in the office of the Prime Minister. One gets the impression that somehow we ought not to abide by the laws of our constitution, that we must disown them and repudiate them. That constitution makes it clear that there is to be a post of cabinet secretary separate and apart from a post of permanent secretary. The only post in the Constitution where the Constitution speaks with clarity about functions is a post of cabinet secretary. Every country in the Eastern Caribbean or the Commonwealth Caribbean has moved to establish a cabinet secretariat and an independent post of permanent secretary in the ministry or the office of the Prime Minister. And we have said very clearly that we want to modernize our system of governance, and therefore we are separating the two posts so that the cabinet secretary is allowed to manage the cabinet office and, of course, respond to the public at large in respect of cabinet matters. And this is where the leader of the opposition took me by surprise, because I thought, as a recent occupant of the office of the Prime Minister, where he himself had had to face the sheer deluge of correspondence from all and sundry, that he would have understood the need for us to strike out in a new direction. But the member for Central Castro is not to be outdone, Mr. Speaker. He latches on to the post of Permanent Secretary Special Initiatives. Now, what's the history behind this post? This post was created in 1999-2000. And the position was first held by Mr. Aloysius Barthelme from the 1st of July 1999 to the 23rd of June 2001. After he retired, that position was never abolished. And to date, it remains in the staff and structure of the Office of the Prime Minister. In fact, when the former government got into office, the post of Permanent Secretary, Office of Special Initiatives, was first held by Mrs. Glenda Clark Polius from 3rd February 2009 to 21st June 2009. When you listen to the member for Central Castries, you would believe that somehow it was this administration that created this post or energized that post. I'll go one step further. From June 24, 2009 to September 21, 2010, Mrs. Esther Brathwaite was transferred to that post, Permanent Secretary, Office of Special Initiatives. Apparently, they couldn't find a ministry at the time to send her to, so they exiled her there. So that post has been occupied by two permanent secretaries under the former administration. The current situation is simple. That when the secondment of Mr. Darrell Montrop ended at the OECS, the question of locating him came up, and that was the only vacant position that existed. So Mr. Montrop had to be sent to that position. Now, of course, he's acting as cabinet secretary. But what is alarming me is this, and I go back on this issue. Look, if we want to breathe new life and fresh life into our debates, then we have to put all our cards on the table. You can't be selective in the truth. You can't, by all means, criticize. It's necessary. And a good government deserves a good opposition. Because when you see the opposition identifies weaknesses in a government, all it does is to help the government get better. So we should never ever be afraid of criticism. Once the criticism is justified, it is factual, it is honest. I say put all your cards on the table. Since this government has got into office, we have met over 42 positions, in fact, 48 positions created by the former administration outside of the Public Service Commission. 48. All appointed by contract. All. And you know what? In this house, the creation of a simple post a permanent secretary is singled out as representing the tendency, so-called tendency, of the Minister of Finance to profligacy. And look at, I'm not going to mention names because it's unworthy, it's incorrect. I will not do so. These are private individuals. But this is what I mean. Be consistent. Look at the salary levels. 9,400, 16,800, 9,828, 12,800, 5,000. I'm not going to go and name positions. Positions become irrelevant after a while. Land use planner, if you want, 8,600. 9,000. 8,000 again. 6,005, 8,300, 8,652, and I can go on. Now, to date, none of those persons have been dismissed from the positions that they hold. None. Even if we harbor very strong doubts about the constitutionality of this arrangement. And then, what, they're accused of administrative profligacy because we create a position that our constitution requires us to create? mean, clearly. 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 Of course I can send you a copy. You made all these appointments. You made all these appointments. You know about all these appointments. They were made with your approval. And this list came from the public service, so I can share it with you. It's not a problem. You know we talk to each other, so I'll be happy to make it available to you. The member, in the remarkable statements that we heard in the course of debate, there was one that came from the member for Castries Southeast. He is capable of gems. I've said so in the House before. And in his presentation, Mr. Speaker, he says, governments come in and work with the budget they find. The Prime Minister, in his rebuttal or in his presentation, makes the point that the budget is a mismatch. Both points meet. Because both are saying that, on the one hand, an incoming government has a responsibility to, or the choice to, hold on to projects it inherited, and on the other hand, within the limits of the inheritance, then they may try to carve out new programs, new projects. Absolutely correct. And that is why there's so much empathy from the opposition for this budget, because they are able to identify the projects that they created, that we have kept. That's the reason why. And I believe this is healthy. I don't believe that an incoming government should repudiate everything that a former government did. We may repudiate the practices associated with it, but if the idea is good, keep it. And I'll give you one example, Mr. Speaker, of an item under the Ministry of Social Transformation where provision is made for community projects by councils and the rest. That was one of the initiatives of the former minister, make funds available to councils for small community projects. We believe that it is a good idea. The Minister of Finance has kept it. The difference is that we do not appreciate the procedure that was used for financing these projects. That is why there is a forensic audit of all the councils. Because something went chronically wrong. But the idea is a good one. And we need to protect the idea. So, Mr. Speaker, I don't believe that you should automatically throw out everything that you made. And that was one of the problems that emerged with this incoming, with the former government. Because they abandoned everything that the former administration had done, including PROUD, UHC. Everything was thrown out because somehow it smelled of the Labour Party. We need to abandon this divisiveness of the past, and we need to turn a new page, and that, I think, has to be the central message. I listened to the member from Castries Central, Mr. Speaker, and I think the leader of the opposition touched on the issue, but he was wise not to embrace what the member for Central Castries said with much commitment, you see, because he would have known better. Unfortunately, again, we get personal. The member for Central Castries says in his presentation that, quote, this minister, meaning the minister, current Minister of Finance, his expenditure always exceed his revenue. Now, when the member spoke, I asked myself, but wait, wasn't he in government just 5 months ago? Has he forgotten all of a sudden? Is there some amnesia? The leader of the opposition was content to say that in crafting a budget, it is always wise to have a surplus. Absolutely correct. and we have fought for a surplus for years. What are the facts? What are the facts on this matter, Mr. Speaker? One of the reasons why this country is in trouble is this. And this is a matter all of us have to reflect on as we prepare for the budget debate itself. The reality is that from fiscal year 2009-2010, recurrent expenditure has exceeded recurrent revenue. That is the reality that we face, and it is the source of the crisis that we have on our hands. Since 2009-2010, the expenditure we make on salaries, on wages, on materials, etc., for the public service, for the government of St. Lucia, has exceeded the amount of money that we raise by revenue or otherwise. But you know what is worse, and why the situation is serious? The rate of increase in recurrent expenditure now exceeds that of recurrent revenue on average by 10% every year. That's why we are in a hole, and the best thing for us to do, all of us to do around this parliament, and I'm not going to spend time in any blame game, because there are such circumstances that existed, Mr. Speaker, over the last couple of years that did not give the Minister of Finance many options. And it's not correct that this side of the House never accepted there was global dislocation or adverse conditions. I can pick up any Hansard, of any budget debate, and give examples of several statements by members of their opposition about the global situation. What was questioned were the policies to deal with it, not the fact that a global crisis existed. Mr. Speaker, clearly we need to prepare the debate for this matter, because all of us sitting around this table, we have a responsibility to tell the people of St. Lucia how we're going to deal with this deficit. How are we going to crawl out of it? And I know the Minister of Finance knows this. The question is, why is it that the member from Central Castries did not know? Or is it that he knew, but he chose not to admit it that he knew, and figured by assaulting the Minister of Finance somehow, the Minister of Finance would be covered? That's not going to happen. This is the moment where truth must prevail. The opposition and the government may disagree on the policies to resolve this problem. We may disagree. We may have differences of opinion. But let us start with a common denominator. Admit that we have a huge fiscal deficit and we have to deal with it. Now, what's the history of this matter? Mr. Speaker, in budgets between 2002 going way up to 2007, successive governments have always planned for a recurrent deficit. Always. The question is whether having planned for a recurrent deficit, it in fact occurs. That's the question. And I have bad news for the member of Central Castries. In all of these years between 2002 going up to 2007, with the exception of 2002, 2003, and those who choose to remember will remember it was September 11th. The outturn was always a recurrent surplus. We went into every budget, new budget, with a recurrent surplus. However, since 2009-2010, despite the best efforts of the Minister, then Minister of Finance, the member for Castries North, to have a planned surplus and a balanced recurrent budget, recurrent deficits have always been realized. Earlier today, the member for Castries North requested the staff of the Ministry of Finance to provide him with some information. I didn't intervene. I think that's how it should be. And I want to tell him that once he needs information that is within the public domain, then he has a right to ask for it. So if he wants me to send him this summary of budget performance since 1999-2000, I will oblige. And I'm going to ask him to send it around to all the members in the opposition so that they too can have an appreciation of what I'm saying. In 1999-2000, the surplus was 124 million. In 2000-2001, 42.8. In 2003-2004, 7.4. Climax 2004-2005, 21.6. In 2005-2006, 17.2. That's the reality. But we have been running a serious deficit from 2009-2010. If the argument today was cast by way of saying that we have a fiscal deficit on our hands that we have to cure, should we be holding back, for example, on the posts, the multiplicity of posts that we have created for the Comfort Bay in view for another year? I would understand. That's a different angle. So let us start this debate and prepare for this debate in a different way. The issue in the budget debate has to be this. Given the huge fiscal deficit we have, given the fact that this fiscal deficit commenced from the financial year 2009-2010, given the fact that it has increased by 10% every year since then, what do we do as a country to resolve that problem? That is what the issue has to be. Of course, I can't set issues, but that is an issue I have to talk to the country about. And so there is good reason to embrace the people of St. Lucia and bring this matter to their attention. And maybe, those who listen and analyze the throne speech by the Governor General will see wisdom in that speech. Because no country with the kind of fiscal deficit we have can resolve it without some measure of understanding between the political parties and between the country as a whole. I'm not going to engage in any blame game. That's the inheritance. That's the history. We have to live with it. And I'm the first to tell you that that Minister of Finance in those days was in a difficult position in terms of maneuvering. Clearly, the historical evidence will show there were dramatic excesses in the months leading up to the general election, and that too has contributed to this deficit. It crowned a deficit. But the structural problem in our economy in 2009 created that situation for him. It's not a time for us to croak. It's not a time for us to flee each other and lambaste each other. No, Mr. Speaker, excuse that last word. Not a time for that. It's a time for us to see what we can do to ease the country out of the situation. And I think we can do it. We can do it. We can put the finances of the country back on firm footing. But there must be some measure of consensus between us on the issue. Mr. Speaker, in the course of the presentations, there were some issues that were raised that I want to address very, very quickly. Perhaps since the member for Denry South impressed me so much with his presentation, I should start with him. And I want to give him some information that is available to me and is subject to further correction. And I want to say to you that you keep that dialogue going with the Minister of Infrastructure to resolve these issues. You raised your concern about the Victoria Street Road in Denry. The information that I have says that on the 20th of November, 8 days before the elections, and if you said you stopped the contract, and I applaud you for doing that. I applaud you if you did. A contract was awarded, a direct purchase order was awarded to Construction and Industrial Equipment Limited for the rehabilitation and paving of two roads, Victoria Street and Mole Street in Denry. Apparently, while the direct purchase contract was awarded, the ministry claims that it had no funds available at its disposal to execute the contract. And subsequent to the general elections, the government secretary engaged in an exchange of letters, which you're welcome to look at, with the contractor, advising that the project would not go forward in the absence of an allocation. I've asked the minister to dispatch his officers to the road and to see whether some attention could be given to the road. And I urge you to remain in dialogue with him. Now, the new Denry Infant School that you raised, and I'm going to ask Mr. Speaker that you allow me to refer to this. The information that is given to me today says that there is a need to undertake a feasibility study of the proposed site. Terms of reference for a consulting firm to prepare detailed designs of quantities, drawings, and technical information and supervision and certification of works for the construction of the school has been prepared and submitted to the World Bank for a no objection approval. As part of the consulting services, the firm will undertake an analysis and evaluation of the conditions of the proposed site for construction. Naturally, this will include the usual environmental and impact assessments. I urge you in that instance, keep in touch with the Ministry of Education. But the crux of it is that submissions have to be indeed made to the World Bank for no objection approval. In respect of the primary school, some works have been completed, and the Ministry of Education is in the process of carrying out an assessment and review to determine the adequacy of the work and whether there is a need for additional works. In addition to this, a flood risk assessment of flooding is being done to give some indication of whether future flooding can seriously affect the school in its current location. I'm not too sure that you wanted too much information on the new Denry Hospital, because I think you appreciated the work that is underway. But the information I have here says, prior to construction of the hospital, the following required: environmental impact assessment to determine land suitability, environmental issues, safeguards and social issues, and a consultancy is being funded by the government of St. Lucia, and the consultant made a presentation on March 17th on this matter. And the Ministry of Health has hired Caribbean Consulting Engineers, CCE, with savings from the CDB Economic Reconstruction Project, funded project to prepare architectural and structural designs. It is suggested that this assignment would be completed by May 2012, and the next steps will involve hiring a consultant for the review of the architectural and structural design. So it seems to be on its way, and I hope that that answers most of your major concerns. I now turn to some issues raised by the member for Meek South. And I just want to emphasize again that I appreciated his comments about some of the programs, particularly in the agricultural sector, while he drew attention to some weaknesses. But principally, let me deal with the school feeding program. That seemed to be an issue, not just for him, but for other members of the opposition. The item, of course, was wages, line 102, school feeding program. The information I have here says that part of the problem was that a shift allowance was classified, was wrongly classified in this program under the school feeding program. In other words, it should not have been there. This prompted a reclassification of expenditure to other programs where shift allowance was a shortfall, such as secondary schools. So that the reduction in the wages account was not a result of a decrease in the number of persons employed under the school feeding program. That's not the reason. In fact, under line item 110, supplies and materials, that increased from $807,860 in 2011-2012 to $1,005,841 in 2012-2013, basically to accommodate the increase in food items, amongst other materials needed, as well as the increase in the number of students being accommodated. So I hope that clarifies that and reassures you that all is well. You expressed some concern about the consultancies at the Sir Arthur Lewis Community College. I just want to say that there is some critical thinking on the way where Sir Arthur Lewis is concerned. But I did give instructions that the consultancies proceed. I did not think it was wise to bring an end to the consultancies. So a provision was made in the estimates of expenditure for this year for the completion of the consultancies carried out by the college. So I want to tell you that that is safe. It's not what you thought, that we had amputated it. So the consultancies will come to the end. But I would say to you that once those consultancies are in, then we have some, as a parliament, has have a critical decision to make about future college. Because the real question is whether St. Lucia can finance it. That's going to be the question. And we need to talk about it frankly. If it's one thing we should not engage in political skirmishes about or political disputes about, is the future of the college. Because it means a lot to all of us. And we have a shared history where the institution is concerned. So let's wait for the reports and take it from there. On the question of early childhood education, let me just say this. I thought your comments, the comments of the opposition, were unfair. Even from the member from Niku North. Unfair because a lot of the expenditure that occurred under early childhood education had to be supplemented in the course of previous financial years in-house. What is this? That I think it would be highly wrong, improper for the governors in Lushad to approach early childhood education in a sporadic way without a carefully thought out plan and approach. And that is what the ministry is doing now. They engage in a critical thinking so that we can chart our way forward, so that all of us have a sense of where we want to take the sector. The good thing is that we are all committed to it and we know the value of it. But 5 months is too limited a time to really prepare a comprehensive program to take us forward. So I want to reassure you that we are all agreed on this, and it's just a question now of spending this year and preparing a plan to go forward. The member for Castries Southeast raised the issue of the fencing of the Bexar Primary School, and I don't know the exchange between him and the Ministry of Education, but what I can say is that the Ministry of Education did not make a request to the Minister of Finance for the fencing of that school. So it was not considered. However, clearly, if it is a major issue for the parliamentary representative, then my advice would be to engage in some discussion with the ministry to tackle that problem. Obviously, too, while we will fund other initiatives which we promised the people of St. Lucia, the issue of the laptop for schools, Form 4, will be addressed next financial year. We are spending this financial year to do the work properly, to identify the sources of the laptops, make sure that we get the best deals available, make sure that we resolve the issue of security of the laptops, make sure that we train the teachers. We want to spend this year to do that, and the allocation for that will come next financial year and will be introduced not this September but the following year, so that we clear the deck totally. And again, we do not go through this in a haphazard way, because if you're going to introduce the laptops, you want to make sure you get the right laptop, you want to make sure it has the right security features, you have to make sure you train the teachers. That's been the experience of countries around the region. And so we would attend to other matters this financial year, but not that particular matter. Mr. Speaker, I accept that I too should adhere to the agreed time with the opposition, and so I will end this rebuttal here to say that I look forward to the debate, and all of us now, I believe, can see the value of this approach. And I want to thank again all members for the advice and the information. I think that the words of the Leader of the Opposition are salutary. As I said, it's unfortunate that there's such a mismatch, such violent contradiction between what he said at the end and what he said at the beginning, but I understand that there's room for a little political theater now and then. But the important thing is that we now need to work together in the interests of that country. And we must breathe it. That is why, on the issue of VAT, which is an item for which provision has been made in this budget, that we have to consider very carefully. It is interesting that in his final budget presentation prior to the elections, the Leader of the Opposition said he was heartened by the position of the opposition. He cited the fact that a reluctant opposition had come to accept the reality of that. That was his budget speech. Now, the marriage that was in the offing on the issue apparently will not take place anymore, because the opposition wants to divorce itself from the potential marriage on this issue. You know, Mr. Speaker, when you are a politician and the leader of a party and the rest of it, in a passage of time, you say things, as the Honourable Member for Castries North will remember, you say things that are well-intentioned. You mean in what you say. Others will take it and scandalize it because they probably feel that it's part of the old game, part of the old process. Yes, I've had both worlds. I'm not ashamed to say so. I've had both worlds. That is why now I can insist that we change certain things in the way we do it, because I've learned. I remember with bananas, and a member from Migu North, Mrs. Speaker, spoke eloquently about the plight of the farmers. I pleaded for both political parties to have a joint position on the future of bananas. It never happened. Never happened. What year? When I was in government, when I was in opposition, as members, the deputy who sits here can attest, you'll find it in Hansard. And what has happened? Today we don't have the answers to our farmers because we misled them. We misled them. With that, you have the former opposition party that has come the distance to rethink its position on that. And we didn't do it while we're in office. Now, we did it while we're in opposition. The then Prime Minister accepted that he had seen movement in the opposition. We confirmed it in our manifesto. We came in your direction, signaling that on this issue, we need to be of one mind. We need to think about it. Just like we need to think about the fiscal deficit left behind that you and I have to find a solution to protect the livelihoods of our people. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have nothing to say.
Honourable Members, the question is that the Honourable House of Assembly do adopt the report of the Standing Finance Committee on the estimates of expenditure for the financial year 2012-2013 in the sum of $1,457,859,100 and do agree that the said sum do form a charge against the Consolidated Fund and other funds of the State of St. Lucia. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye.
Aye.
As many as are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to move that the House stands adjourned to Tuesday, the 8th, for the appropriation bill. Tuesday the 8th at 5 p.m.
Honourable Members, the question is that this House do stand